Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply. Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
It's Tuesday morning, May 11th, and storms again this morning. Be careful out there as you're traveling around. Power outages in a number of areas throughout the metro area as well, which means traffic lights may be out. Proceed with caution. Make sure you understand what yield actually means. That always seems to be an issue out there. We've got a great show lined up for you today. We'll go open lines in the last hour. We're going to talk about a couple of different things. California posted a $75 billion surplus, which includes about $26 billion worth of federal stimulus money. Kind of begs the question why we're giving away all this money if we're posting these types of surpluses in states. Will crime be an issue in the mayor's race? This is an election year. We'll look at other cities and what's happening there. And also, we'll talk a little bit about pension funds. Big scandal in Pennsylvania relative to a teacher's fund there. You will recall part of this rescue plan money is set aside to salvage bad decisions, horrible management. We'll talk about that as well. In the 11 o'clock hour, Wade Regas joins us, real estate consultant and economist. We'll take a look at the residential and commercial tax property tax numbers. There seems to be a little difference of opinion as to the approach by Errol Williams. A little tit-for-tat with the council. He pointed out that the council has engaged in the same line of reasoning that he has. So what is their problem? Joining us on the line at the present time, Raphael Goyeneche, head of the Metropolitan Crime Commission. A lot of different issues on crime floating around at the present time. Rafi, welcome to the show.
Hey, Noel, my pleasure. Thanks for having me on again.
Rafi, Friday afternoon, the chief expressed what everyone has characterized as frustration, to say the least. More than 30 arrest warrants needed to book seven teens. They got into a police chase, carjacked a stolen vehicle. Four guns recovered, as I recall, two pistols and an eight, and I forgot what the other, and an AR-15, four pistols and an AR-15 rifle were confiscated. And basically at the scene, he said, we're tired of arresting the same people over and over again.
Right. I mean, you know, words really don't do justice. You need to watch that video and see the expressions on his face, the pained look on his face. So, you know, his officers are doing their job. They're responding to and prioritizing violent calls for service under trying circumstances with manpower shortages. And when they apprehend this carload of carjackers, they discover that there's several warrants, and some of them have been recently arrested and released for automobile thefts and automobile burglaries. And now there's a carload of guns and an armed robbery victim in their wake, and all of them are injured, some of them critically. And it could have been even worse. So, yes, you know, I think frustration is the proper word, because the police department is doing the best that they can under trying circumstances, and they're scratching their head wondering, what about the rest of the criminal justice system? Why are these individuals that are repeat offenders being released so quickly, and, you know, what's the status of them being held accountable and prosecuted for these felony offenses? Yes, they're juveniles, but these are felony crimes. And what about the rights and the considerations for the victims and the law-abiding citizens of New Orleans that are being put in harm's way and at risk by the actions of criminal offenders like this, dangerous and violent criminal offenders.
The chief is a man of very few words, but a lot of times if you listen very closely, as you said, the words that he says matters. He said at the scene, we need our entire system together, working collectively to hold individuals accountable. And you and I have talked about this stream of accountability. There's not much transparency in the realm of juvenile crime. The identities of the juveniles are withheld, which I think is a disservice to the parents of other kids. If they knew what was going on, in many cases, they may not allow their children to be hanging out with some of these other kids. But be that as it may, it's not until we get cases like this that we really find out about the criminal history of a number of kids that are out and about running around and having not ever been held accountable.
Exactly. The people that are most likely to commit a crime are people that have previously committed crimes. You know, it goes back to that old RAND study of, you know, career criminals. You have a certain percentage of criminal offenders that are responsible for a disproportionate amount of crime in every community. So, you know, when the police make arrests, particularly for violent offenders, and they discover that they had been recently arrested, you know, for other crimes, felony offenses, and they're back out on the streets, it is really demoralizing to the police department. Because the public looks to the police department, they don't realize, you know, that it wasn't the police department's fault that these individuals are back out on the streets, victimizing additional people. They wonder why the police department isn't doing their job. And shows like this and the news provide badly needed information, and it's particularly hard to get that information if the offenders are juveniles.
Were you as surprised as I was that the media and otherwise immediately focused on the fact that there was a chase? It seems to me that as a result of this federal consent decree, that there is like laser-like focus on whether or not we actually chase a criminal. Thankfully, in this case, they allowed them to do so because, in my mind, the trek that this group of kids were going down was not going to ever end pretty. And fortunately, someone had not lost has not lost their lives.
So what you're describing is sort of the new reality of where we are in 2021, where offenders are viewed as victims of, you know, an unjust system, that law enforcement officials are the villains. They're the bad guys now. And what's invisible and voiceless are victims and citizens' rights. So the whole where we are right now is really out of balance. Yes, defendants and offenders have rights, but so does the public, and there has to be a balancing act. And what we're seeing is the scales tipping to an extreme that are ignoring public safety, ignoring the rights of citizens, and villainizing law enforcement that's trying to do their job. Yeah, there's some bad police officers in this country that do a disservice to the badge, but those are the minority, and you can say the same about every profession, from, you know, religious, you know, officials to teachers, to every profession. But to villainize all police officers because of some rogue police officers violating their oath of office is really doing a disservice to the profession and a disservice to public safety.
But where do we go from here? You know, you and I have talked about the situation with the district attorney's office. We have a mindset that we've over-criminalized activity, you know, that there's a disproportionate impact relative to race. But we never look, as you just said, we never look at the offenders. I mean, there's a disproportionate offender rate and it's disproportionate by race as well. But
everything is focused on the age and ethnicity and gender of the offender. Why isn't anyone asking questions about the same questions about the victims of crime? So if race and gender and ethnicity is relevant with respect to the offender, why isn't it taken into consideration with respect to the victims in all of this? And really, what we're talking about is, you know, we're trying to assign some type of racial bias to this, when in reality, this is right and wrong. This is, you know, breaking the law. And it really should not be taken into consideration what the race is of someone that's broken the law. What you're looking for are, you know, was a law broken? Can you prove that the person that is being arrested is responsible for the crime? And, you know, that's just the reality of where we are right now. So everything is looked at through the racial prism. And, you know, I'd like to think that we'll get beyond this. But it's going to be a while before that happens.
I was reading a news story about a study in New York that highlights what you just said. 65% of the homicide victims in New York City are black, but they make up less than a quarter of the city's population. Relative country in, you know, across this country, in what some people refer to as unsuccessful homicide shootings, black Americans are over 70% of the victims, and they make up 13% of the population. And, you know, when you think about this, over 90% of black homicide victims were killed by another black person, not by any other race. But it seems as though none of this matters when we're talking about crime, and we're going through this little small prism as opposed to looking at the full picture.
Right. I mean, if you want to look at the full picture, in 2019, before the pandemic, as of May the 10th, there were 37 homicides from January the 1st to May the 10th. Of 2019, and that same period of time this year, there were 77. That's 108% increase in homicides. Shootings 2019 to 2021 are up 132%. Carjackings 2019 to 2021 are up 173%. And, you know, that is what the public uses to measure their perceptions of safety in their community. When the police department and crime is escalating, we need to focus on what can the police department do. And everyone looks to the police department because it all starts with the police, you know, someone dialing 911 and the police arriving and hopefully solving a crime. That's becoming, and something that I think the public isn't really aware of yet, is the critical manpower crisis that this police department is experiencing.
Let's stop there for staffing right now, Raffi, at the
lowest levels that it's been since 1978.
Raffi,
and the prospects for hiring exceeding attrition this year don't look very good, which means that at the end of this year, going into next year, there'll be even fewer police officers available to respond to calls for service. Fewer police officers means that they don't get to the calls, they don't get to the calls in a timely manner, and you know, every minute of response time that's delayed, the fewer officers you have to work on solving crimes, the less likely the offenders are of being identified and apprehended and prosecuted, which means that crime continues to spiral out of control. So we're reaching, and we may be at critical mass right now, Police manpower is about 1,150 officers. And as I said, we are on pace to lose more officers this year than we hire, which will put us at an even lower point next year than we are this year. And this is already the lowest staffing levels that we've seen in this city since 1978, at a time when crime is increasing and overtime has still not been restored to the levels that it was in 2019.
Let's talk more about that when we come back. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. We're joined by Raphael Goyeneche, head of the Metropolitan Crime Commission, looking at the empirical data behind the crime that's going on in the city. We'll be right back. Stay with us. We're back with Raphael Goyeneche, head of the Metropolitan Crime Commission. We've been looking at crime in the city. Raffi, when you talk about staffing being the lowest since 1978, when you talk about 108% increase in homicide, 132% increase in shootings, and 173% increase in carjackings, we know that we've had some short-term successes over the past couple of decades, but mostly long-term failures. We use this word systemic a lot. This to me seems like a systemic problem.
Well, exactly. So, you know, the last raises that the NLPD got were in 2018. So it was for 2018, 19, and 20. So the raises were phased in over 3 years. During that three-year term, that helped stabilize attrition and reduce attrition because officers that were eligible to retire decided to delay their retirement because they wanted the new raises to be recalculated into their pensions. So one of the strategies to reduce attrition is to give pay raises, because it forces officers to think that, if I delay my retirement, I'll get a little bit more money in retirement if I don't pull the plug right away. So that is something that I think needs to be considered by the city. But the city has to do something, and they just can't do something short term. We're not going to be able to hire enough officers, particularly raw recruits. We need to consider some other things. We need to hire more civilians to staff and fill some of the jobs that are being done by police officers behind desks and in offices, and figure out if they can be put out into the field or into the detective bureaus to solve crimes. Another impediment to rebuilding the numbers is the city does not allow for lateral transfers. So other departments routinely accept lateral transfers from the NOPD, but the NOPD, because of city policies, cannot hire a lateral person. They have to come in as a recruit and start from the bottom. So, you know, if we're interested in trying to give a numbers boost, we need to remove that artificial impediment, because if we're offering better salaries than some of the other departments, then we could benefit from that and get not the other department's problems, but some of the best of the best from other departments that may be looking for a better opportunity to provide for their families. So there's several things that need to be taken into consideration and considered by the city leadership, the mayor, and the council. But we don't have the luxury of saying, well, we'll wait until after the fall elections or next year. We need to be doing that right now, because like I said, we're at critical mass with manpower. And, you know, there's over 33,000 calls for service per month. Violent crime is surging. And this year we're on pace to exceed last year's record pace, which was a 10-year high. So something needs to be done right now to aid the police department. And then, of course, the other components of the criminal justice system, I think, need to do their jobs, too, to make sure that the police aren't being forced to redo their jobs over and over again, rearresting violent repeat offenders.
Were you as surprised the other day as I was to a public records request by Fox 8 to learn of the shortages that we're experiencing in EMS? And do you see, you know, a parallel here? This kind of hide the ball as to how many men and women we actually have that are employed, that are working within the NOPD. And then we find out about EMS where calls for an ambulance are just going unanswered. I mean, you know, it's one thing to not answer a stolen bike call, but when somebody needs medical assistance and they're standing by and they're waiting and waiting and waiting, and every second is a critical second as it relates to their life, and we're just finding out about this as a result of a public records request. I don't recall any council meeting, discussion about this ever. And I don't know that there's been that many, quite frankly, about police staffing either. And, you know, what the short-term, intermediate, long-term strategies are to try and boost, you know, the manpower shortage here. We talked about overtime, but that's not a strategy.
Both fiscally as well as it's something that's not sustainable, because fewer numbers of officers cannot work the amount of overtime that's necessary to do their jobs effectively. So, I mean, putting it in perspective, you know, the national best practice for the homicide unit, every detective should have no more than 5 cases a year. Our detectives in homicide have north of 13 cases per year. You know, so how do they solve those homicides when they're picking up a new homicide every 25 days? And that, you know, that is a real problem, you know, for the department. And that applies to every division, every, you know, subunit within the police department. They are being overworked because they're understaffed, and it's non-sustainable. That's why hiring is so important, and the city needs to explore every available option. We can't wait. We don't have the luxury of waiting. You know, we have to prioritize what is important. What's important is flood protection and public safety. And that means that you have to prioritize your available resources to make sure that public safety is not being compromised. And yes, it's, you know, unfortunate, and the city's between a rock and a hard place. But when you have diminished resources, you have to decide what's most fundamental and most important to public safety: flood protection, police, EMS, fire. Those are indispensables. Those are the foundations of prosperity. And those are basic services that not only protect property, but protect human life. And that's has to be the number one priority of this city or any city.
I've been following the mayor's race in New York City very closely, because that has been a city that had fully embraced this reimagined policing, defund the police. Actually, they took significant dollars out of the police budget. I was curious to find out whether or not crime and the impact of crime in communities across any jurisdiction is still going to have the same juice that it once had politically. And I've been surprised to find that it does in New York, and it's really become the touchstone issue of that mayor's race. I'm curious, though, I don't see the juice here in this election year thus far.
Well, again, you know, you're much more worldly than I am. You're following New York. I'm not. I don't know if, you know, there are major candidates seeking that office. Chances are, everything that I've read, you know, Mayor Cantrell, I don't think an incumbent mayor has lost a reelection bid, and I haven't seen anyone announce that they're going to challenge her. So if there isn't going to be much of a campaign, then the issues aren't really going to be talked about. What's going to drive The crime issue in New Orleans are the numbers that I'm talking about. And at some point, you know, the public will say enough is enough. I don't know what the event is going to be, but we've both been around long enough to know that there is an event coming where the public will say enough is enough. And that's when the politicians will shift into gear. And if the politicians want to get a little bit ahead of the curve, I think they need to wake up and smell the coffee and realize that, you know, the public's safety is really in jeopardy by some of the staffing level deficiencies that we have in the, you know, criminal justice, particularly first responders, police, fire, and EMS, and they need to do something about it, and they need to do something before we hit critical mass.
You and I have talked, and you just mentioned attrition, and you thought there may have been some date coming up in the very near future relative to the municipal pension system. Were you able to find out any more information on that as to whether or not that may stimulate additional separations from the NOPD?
Right. There was a state law passed last year that really, because of COVID, it kind of flew under radar and wasn't really recognized, you know, for the problems that it might create in the city of New Orleans and maybe other municipalities. And the change I'm referring to is that the legislature passed a law saying that if you're in the retirement system, if you retire after July 1st of 2021, you cannot draw your pension benefits if you take another job for 2 years. So that means that people that are pension eligible, if they want to retire and take another job and still draw their pension, they have to do so before July 1st of this year. So the NOPD is holding their breath to see how many officers they're going to lose between now and June the 30th to take advantage of the existing law and not follow under the new law that takes effect July 1st. So that is going to be driving retirement decisions, which will further handicap the police department's ability, because the 1150 number that I gave you, that number is names on a piece of paper. The police department and the city considers, you know, that number to, and that includes people that just started the academy, that are in the academy for 6 months. It includes sick and furlough. It includes people that are under suspension or vacation. So that 1,150 officers is really closer to 1,000 officers than it is 1,150 officers. And every veteran that leaves the department, you know, it's going to take that rookie a year, you know, 6 months in the academy and 6 months of field training before they're out on their own. And that's, you know, that's them not having the type of experience that you're losing. So you can't, you know, those numbers are really misleading, because at the number of officers that are available to be deployed in any given time by the city of New Orleans, those are just names on a piece of paper, you know, right now. And the reality is that you don't have that many officers to work in any given day. You have a lot less than that.
I hear what you're saying. I just don't feel any exigency. I don't feel anybody that's really uptight and excited upset about this. I mean, I keep looking and looking and looking. I mean, I remember vividly. It wasn't too long ago, and I had conversations with you when I was sheriff. We discussed staffing all the time. I'd sit in my office. I'd look at these staffing numbers every week, you know, and had my finger on the pulse of these staffing numbers. And, in fact, in the districts, we had a complement of officers. We tried to overstaff by 10 to 15 so that we would not have to pay overtime and that we'd have the availability to move people in and out of in-service training a lot easier and stuff. It was sometimes very hard to maintain that. I'm assuming they probably are still doing that today because it really worked well for us. But we always did, you know, a beat structure where we have 9 beats in a district and a man responsible for a relatively small area of responsibility, and we always felt like that was the best way to manage that. The NOPD abandoned that probably almost a decade and a half ago because they could never staff it. And it was
And that's not the NOPD. That wasn't the police superintendent's decision.
That was the political leadership's decision.
You know, this downward spiral started with a hiring freeze imposed by Mayor Landrieu.
Yeah.
So, you know, we haven't rebuilt from those numbers, and we're falling even further behind in all of this. And that's why, you know, I believe that, you know, the process where the police chief is appointed by the political leadership hasn't worked, and it's not going to work. Yeah. I would rather
Let's pick up right there. We got to get to a break. We'll be right back. We're visiting with Rafael Goyeneche, head of the Metropolitan Crime Commission. Stay with us, folks. We are back, and, you know, we're talking to Rafael Goyeneche, head of the Metropolitan Crime Commission. This being National Police Week, it really causes me some concern when you talk about staffing shortages. And one of the reasons why I was always in tune to where we were was to make sure that the men and women that were answering these calls had the appropriate and adequate backup. That when someone called and we had a critical incident, that we didn't have just one unit there. We had 2 units, possibly 3 units. I used to get letters from my constituents all the time saying how impressed, how professional. They found it reassuring, felt very reassured by the fact that multiple units responded because, as we remember, the lives given, you know, whose lives ended too short, obviously, in National Police Week, the individuals that have made the ultimate sacrifice. And then today, right now, on the House floor in Baton Rouge, they're going to vote on whether or not they're going to take qualified immunity away from officers, which I think is going to contribute to even a higher attrition rate as they begin to evaluate, because not only do they want to get rid of qualified immunity, they want to get rid of indemnity. They want to make officers personally responsible, putting all of their assets at risk for the sake of split-second decisions. And I'm not sure. I was in the business 40 years. In this climate, I'm going to be honest with you, I'm not sure this is the occupation I'd go into with all of that.
Well, you're absolutely right. And you know, we'd be naive, and I couldn't agree with you more. I think that is fueling some of the attrition, the fact that there's so few officers, and if the officers need backup, the people on that force know that they're just not there. They may not arrive, and that may be the difference between life and death. You know, and or serious injury. So, you know, again, you know, this is so fundamental. And we're not going to see a sitting police chief in this town or any other town be openly critical of their appointing authority and all of this. So if the public wants to know truly what's going on, you know, they need to have somebody, and you were answerable to the public. The sheriffs are answerable to the public. A police chief is answerable to his appointing authority. And we've seen where that's gotten, you know, the NOPD and this city. And having an elected police chief is not a panacea. It doesn't guarantee anything, but I believe that it is preferable over what we've gotten with the appointing authority. I'd rather the public have the right to vote somebody out of office than politicians trying to control the police department when they really don't understand it and they don't want to deal with some of the pressing issues. So they just sweep it under the carpet. What we're talking about today is some of the things that have flown below radar, been swept under the carpet, been soft-pedaled. And, you know, we're asking questions, why hasn't this been disclosed? Well, the reason is the police chief can't talk about these issues because if he does or she does, they're looking for a job. They're out. So, you know, if we want to know more, you know, I think it's preferable to have the police chief answerable to the public than to politicians. The only way to do that is change the city charter, have the police chief elected.
As always, we truly enjoy the hour. It flew by again. Rafael Goyeneche, head of the Metropolitan Crime Commission, thank you so much for joining us. Appreciate your time and your insight, and have a great week, my friend.
Take care. Bye-bye.
We'll be right back, folks. Stay with us.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.